Previously on the Critical Mass Podcast.
Is this thing on? Okay.
I seen it happen. Eat a duck.
You saw a catfish eat a duck?
It's fuel for the imagination.
Do you hear things too?
Sound bites! Keep them frozen, they're good!
I hear someone.
No, don't turn it down.
Hi, I'm Winston.
And I'm Petra.
And you're listening to the Critical Mass Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. We've got some movie reviews, and Petra and I are going to be talking about a few things. Of course, this is the last podcast before the Opposing Forces Kickstarter successfully funds, if all goes well. That's awesome. So thank you if you've jumped in, and if you haven't jumped in, please do. Please do. We need to make the artwork and stuff as cool as possible. And there's a very cool community of people who are already interested, and we're already talking about the stuff that's going on. So that's very, very cool. All right. We just have a couple of movie reviews on deck for you today. And they're both Disney movies. And I want to talk a little bit about our qualifications to review these films, other than, you know, just simply being the target audience, you know, being the market for these films. First of all, because there will be probably some unkind things said. they can't hear you make a face, dear.
Okay. I don't know why you would say anything unkind about something Disney, but that's okay.
Well, that's all right. We need to. We're going to be talking about Maleficent, and we're also going to be talking about The Lone Ranger. But before we do that, I want to talk about a little bit about why we think we are we're not going to be hating on these films just for the sake of hating on them, and we're not going to be hating on these films really because they're Disney films, even though they are. And I think that may have had some bearing on it, but I think that there are some things that need to be addressed, and I think that it's important to realize that we're not just saying these things because these are Disney and Disney is not cool, because that's really not how we feel, is it?
No, Disney is cool. saying Disney is not cool to me is like asking for trouble. I am a bit of a fanatic. Been to the world 8 times, 9 times in the last 5 years. Watch almost every Disney film that comes out. Read the books.
You have a subscription to the D23 magazine.
And also Celebrations magazine.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, you might call me a fan. Maybe. Well.
And, you know, I've been dragged along with that. I'm far more excited about some of the things that Disney has done with their Marvel properties, and with the ability that they have to churn out really technically fantastic films. And I think part of the reason that we've had such a strong reaction to these two films, if I can steal a phrase from Matt McKinney and his fairly awesome YouTube series, which is TOSPOS, if you would like to listen to his podcasts. But we love good Disney films, which is why we really hate bad Disney films. So, but before you jump in on this, we know what's going on. Maybe, probably you don't, because we, I think what we have here in both Maleficent and Lone Ranger are films that are getting some attention that they really don't deserve. And let's start with Maleficent, because we just saw that one. We just went to the theater this weekend.
Yeah, it's a week old. It released last week.
Yep.
Still topping box office. Lots of raves about it.
Yeah.
And we saw it last night at the movie theater.
What was your first reaction to Maleficent?
Well, I enjoyed the movie, and I thought that it was visually stunning.
It was a technically very impressive film, something I have come to expect from Disney Studios.
But as a fangirl,
Angelina Jolie is stunning. So anyway.
I'm not a fan of Angelina Jolie. But I am a Disney fangirl of all the princess story, most of the princess stories.
Right.
There are some that I feel should just go away and pretend they were never part of the franchise. But I don't like what they did with Maleficent. I don't like that they went in and tried to redo Maleficent to make her a not bad guy.
And I think the film really suffered for that. And if anybody is covering their ears in shock and surprise, I really don't know why you would at this point in time. The whole premise of the film is that this is Maleficent's story. So if you really don't want to hear any of the nitpicky details about this film, this is probably a good place to zip ahead if you want to hear us talk about The Lone Ranger.
Yes, yeah, spoilers
ahead. Or
just
to maybe stop and watch the films and then come back and see whether or not you agree. To address that first, in the case of Maleficent, is this a film that you would say, oh, you know what, you perfect stranger who enjoys good quality movies and I know nothing else about you, should you go see Maleficent?
Yes.
Okay. She says yes. I would say no. I would say that this is one to pass up.
Now, see, I enjoyed the story. I thought that the film was beautifully done as far as visuals.
Right.
And I thought that it was a viable story.
Okay.
But if it hadn't been a story, a fairy tale that I was familiar with,
right,
and Maleficent is this bad guy, this ultimate
right,
baddie, and they're trying to make her not like that, and I didn't enjoy that at all.
You know, I think that more than anything else is what hurt the film. If this had been any other story, or better yet, if this had been an original story rather than something that's already got the baggage attached to it that Sleeping Beauty does, I think that this film would have been a much better film.
I think you're probably right. If I had gone in not expecting it to be, oh, this is Sleeping Beauty, this is Maleficent's side of Sleeping Beauty.
Right.
But it wasn't. It was like a whole rewrite of the fairy tale.
It was a rewrite of the fairy tale. And it was a rewrite with a fairly heavy agenda drum that beat with a steady rhythm. And that really annoyed me.
Well, see, that's not something I really pay attention to. So
aside
from, I go to see the movie.
I know you do. And, you know, I thought the movie was simplistic. I thought it was clumsy. I thought there were just many different places where things should have, you know, could have and should have been done differently. Just aside from, not really on the technical side, this is a technically, visually stunning film. This is great to look at. But the story was trying really, really hard, and it read like a film school. It read like a film school script by a college student who has just realized that they can change the world, and they alone can change the world if everybody listens to this message. And that more than anything else was the primary disconnect from the story for me. I think there's a lot of things in it that hurt the piece. We didn't have a villain.
We didn't have a villain, and I think, to me, what hurt it the most was the changing of the ending.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, this is true.
The whole story of Sleeping Beauty is that the power of true love will always prevail. That love is better. And, you know, Aurora and Philip fall in love, his kiss wakes her.
Right.
And that's not the way that this movie is.
And you know what? We were wondering about this. The cartoon version that Disney did a while back, they don't... You know, Disney gets a lot of flack for trotting out the, you know, true love at first sight and all this kind of thing. And, the whole movie Frozen was built around that premise. But Frozen was an excellent film. In the original, in Walt Disney's Sleeping Beauty, there is time for Philip and Aurora to develop a relationship. You know, they have a meeting. They do get to find out, and Philip realizes what's at stake. And in this movie, Philip is played for he's a buffoon.
He's a pawn.
No, maybe buffoon and pawn are a little strong. He's really a non-entity. They have the one passing meeting, and then the one incident in the chamber where the little fairies urge him to kiss her, and then he's thrown out, and you don't see him again until the end of the movie.
Yeah,
where you know he takes a bow with the rest of the cast.
Well, and it's still at the end of the movie, they still lead you to believe that Aurora and Philip live happily ever after because he's in love with her, but it wasn't
true
love's kiss. And yeah.
And I guess the villain of the piece is
King Stefan.
Stefan, yeah.
Aurora's father.
And, the whole thing is built around the premise of hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Essentially, yes.
And that would be cool, but... And, if that is going to be the premise, they should have done it... They should have done it correctly. They should have done it in a way that would have logically and emotionally held together. Now, if you were in Maleficent's place, is your first instinct going to be strike against this man's child or strike against this man's wife?
I don't know, because in the movie there's not actually a lot of time issue. Like, you know, time has passed, but you don't know how much.
Right.
And she is wronged and she is angry, but depending on how much time, it might not even be strike against his wife. It would be strike against him.
Yeah.
After him, because again, even a woman scorned realizes an innocent party.
Right.
I mean, if my ex-boyfriend from 30 years ago, okay, not that I'm that old, but, you know, if an ex-boyfriend from 30 years ago had wronged me and I was scorned, would I go after his wife now? No. Would I go after his child? No. I would want to hurt him, but I wouldn't go after those he loves. As a woman, that's just not what you do.
It's not. And for Maleficent to act that way, it seems very contrived. This is part of the clumsy I was talking about earlier. It's very contrived that she would do that and hold this particular grudge in that particular way for so long. Especially with all of the lead-up that they do to it. Oh, she's in love with him. He's in love with her. He's taking away her innocence.
And then greed lures him away from this idyllic existence in this other realm, essentially.
Right. Exactly.
And so he chooses the other realm and power and glory over true love.
If anything, Maleficent ought to be taking away from him the things that he has loved. You know, the things that drew him away from her.
Yeah, she could take the kingship. She could take the country. She could take the power. She has.
She could ruin his relationship with his wife. She could do all kinds of things.
Well, and they show that she has that kind of power, but they don't let her. They portray her as a wronged soul.
Right.
And that this is why
right.
you shouldn't hate her.
And because it's Sleeping Beauty, it demands that she go after Aurora, which by this point is just like, okay, whatever. It seems very contrived. I don't like that that they made all of the good guys in the film into nitwits and buffoons. The three fairies who look after Aurora are utterly useless. The entire kingdom is either evil or, the entire kingdom of men, they're all either evil or useless.
They're whipped.
Yeah.
they act like this King Stefan, has this great power, and I know that a king does, but I also know that people do stand up when something wrong is being done.
Right. Now, one thing that I thought the movie got very, that they did very, very well with Stefan was the way he degenerated. I mean, he starts out as just this selfish kid who's in it to for his own experiences. And as the movie goes on, you know, you see how that plays out and what that makes him into as an adult. And the way he ends up, I mean,
he's stark raving mad.
Well, he's not really stark raving mad, but he's just one step shy of it, isn't he? He's a classic obsessed psychopath. And I thought that was done very well. And if it weren't the story of Sleeping Beauty, I'd have been all in. I think the agenda drum, I did notice that the agenda drum's very strong beat here, that all of the strong, virtuous characters are, you know, they're women. It's Maleficent and Aurora who are the strong, virtuous characters. And everybody else, all of the other women in the film are superficial nitwits, and every single man you meet is a greedy he's a greedy sociopathic violent just horrible individual.
I don't know, I thought the Queen, Stefan's wife, was portrayed even as a strong woman. You only see her very briefly.
She gets one line.
I know, but you still get the impression that she's in control of him.
You know, you're right, you do. And I think it would have been, and she was removed from that position very, very quickly because she took ill and died after the child left.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that it still shows her, as you said, the agenda is that, you know, women are strong and, you know, men are nitwits. And that may be what they were portraying or what, that's not something I pay attention to. But she was portrayed as the stronger of the two in the film.
Yeah. I think that social commentary is there, and I don't think it's accidental. But the bottom line is, this film has received a lot of attention and a lot of praise, saying, oh, it's so good, and it's box office number one and stuff. But I don't think it is. I think it's hurting on a lot of different ways.
Well, box office number one isn't about what you think.
Well, it's not about
think.
The quality of the film, either.
It's not about what you think.
Machine.
It's about what people are paying to go see.
Yeah.
Whether they like it or not, it may not matter because it's what they're paying to go see. And a lot of people may enjoy it because they may not care for Disney's Sleeping Beauty or the general fairy tale of Sleeping Beauty. Because it's not even just Disney's Sleeping Beauty. The generic Sleeping Beauty fairy tale realm, whatever, is, if it's not Aurora and Phillips, it's still Sleeping Beauty and her prince.
Right.
And it's still true love prevails.
Mm. Yeah, that's something else. This film really doesn't... I mean, I guess it technically has a happy ending, but it's not... this is not a feel-good film.
Well, and it's not even... If it had been the Queen's love that awoke Aurora or something like that, but it was this woman that should have hated her and then decided she didn't, and so... It's not even like a mother's love is the strongest love or a father's love is the strongest love. It's just...
Right.
It's weird.
It is weird. You see a lot of time spent on getting Maleficent to be bitter and angry and all this stuff. And there's comparatively not much time spent on Maleficent's relationship with Aurora. And that hurt the film. And I thought the way that the magic was used hurt the film, because it's very schizophrenic in the way it's used. Sometimes it's very subtle, and sometimes it's very overt. And when it needs to be overt, it's subtle. And when it needs to be subtle, it's very overt. And it was just a weird choice, a weird movie with a lot of bad choices in it.
It was a weird movie, but like I don't know that it's one that I'll buy. I liken it a lot to the remake of the sequel to Alice in Wonderland, the Alice movie, or several of the others where they've tried to...
Great and Powerful Oz.
The Great and Powerful Oz, where they've tried to build on a property that already existed or rewrite a mythos that's already in place.
Right, and they just take it in this off direction that's just...
And it's somebody trying to make this great name for themselves. I'm going to take this great property and turn it into something else entirely, and they're going to love
it. Better. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I'm not saying it's not a good film. It was visually beautiful, like you said, and technically just you look at it and you look at the creatures, the fairy tale creatures that they create.
Yeah, the animation was very, very
cool. Shoot,
I
forget what they called it. What did they call it? Where Maleficent lived.
The Moors.
Yeah. The Moors and all of the flowers and the water and the water fairies and the little sprites and the mushrooms.
You liked
and
the mushroom men.
I did like the mushroom men, but all of it is what I would expect from Disney's fairy tale.
Yeah, I was very impressed with Angelina Jolie's makeup because the way they have her Maleficent makeup done, especially towards the end of the film when she's full-blown on into evil fairy queen, it is very angular. Her cheekbones are built out and pronounced, and it's done so very flawlessly so that she looks dead up like the animated character. I was very impressed with that.
She does look a lot like the animated character. Like I said, my gut reaction, and again, this is coming from a fan.
Sure.
A Disney fan. A Disney animated feature fan.
Right.
Or their old movies. Another thing that I thought is, I thought it was very dark. As a Disney fan, again, likening it to Alice or one of those others, it's the same kind of very dark. If my children weren't 10 and 13, I would have been uncomfortable taking them to this film.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Lots of fire,
agree.
Lots of darkness, maybe no blood, but still the
violence is pretty implicit. And, you know, there's a point where little Aurora goes tumbling off of a cliff. And, you know, for small children, that can be very, very disturbing.
To me, it was where Maleficent raises the tree army.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
They attack the king's army.
Oh, okay.
And she's just, you're seeing men thrown like rag dolls. And
yeah, that's pretty
it's
violent.
It's looking like they're being beheaded, and it's looking like they're being, you know.
Yeah.
The king takes an injury that kills him, essentially, from this battle.
Yeah.
Not King Stefan, the king before that.
The previous king, whom Stefan, that's another thing. Stefan is not royal. Stefan wins his kingship through... an act of betrayal and violence against Maleficent that the whole story is based around.
And I don't know if it's like that in the real...
No.
Stefan is actually just a born royal prince.
Stefan is a prince regent who becomes king.
Okay.
You know, he's royal. And this is something else that could have been done differently for so much greater impact. The whole premise behind, especially in a fairy story where fairies are magic and there's a magical realm, kings are kings not through force of arms and not by kings do not derive their authority from the will of the people, you know, from the consent of the governed, as it were. But a king is a king through divine right or through divine appointment. And so classically in fairy stories, not only does the king and the royal family have that right to rule by divine appointment, but they typically have magical powers or magical latency of their own that are tied to that. And all of that is just completely bypassed and ignored in this film. The world of fairy, of the fair folk, is very, very underdeveloped. There's so much that they could have done beyond just, iron burns fairies. Okay. There's just so many missed opportunities. And even through all of this, I could have forgiven everything in the movie. I could have forgiven the agenda drum, that, you know, had all of the women in the theater turning to glare at the men next to them.
I didn't glare at you.
No, you were too busy giggling with Katie.
Well.
But.
We thought it was a very well done movie. However.
I could have forgiven everything else if it hadn't been Sleeping Beauty.
That's it. It's Sleeping Beauty. They're trying to redo the story of Sleeping Beauty and take what I see as one of Walt's original movies, this wonderful fairy tale.
Right.
And rip it away from me.
Yeah. And we
make
don't
this evil
that.
Queen, who, by the way, is still portrayed in the parks as a villain.
Right.
One of the baddies.
Right.
And I can't see them changing that to make her this misunderstood person in the parks. She
yeah.
is
well,
maleficent.
Well, by the end of the movie, her entire look changes. She's not, she gets rid of the whole evil thing.
Again, yeah.
Yeah, so.
But that's what I'm saying. I can't see them taking this new persona into
oh,
the
no.
parks and introducing it into their world.
And you know what? As funny as it is for this movie to have made so much money and done such big box offices as it has, I have a feeling that it's not going to have any staying power for exactly the reasons you talk about. I think people are going to look at this and say, this isn't my Sleeping Beauty. And, you know,
I don't know. I think you may be wrong. I think it may appeal to the whole point may have been not a demographic like me. It may have been the opposite of me. People that don't like Disney movies. Maybe they're trying to draw them in with this.
Maybe.
People that'll
like
go,
Curtis.
See, look, Sleeping Beauty isn't really, you know,
yeah.
happily ever after all or whatever.
Yeah. People who don't have any magic in their soul, is that what you're saying?
Maybe.
But you know what? If that's who they're trying to appeal to, it's worked because Curtis wants to go see this film.
Well, and Curtis would enjoy it.
He might.
It's a visually stunning film. And he's going to ignore the agenda drum. He does that.
He is, yeah.
But he's going to go, and he's going to go, wow, that was kind of cool, and the effects were good, and
he'll be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's enough substance to the story that they give us that he'll be happy, because, you know, Kurt wouldn't have hung around me long at all if he didn't look for something more in his movies than just explosions. It's the reason we both jointly loathe what Michael Bay has done to the Transformers.
But see, at the same time, this really concerns me for the future of the live-action films, because I know that there's a Cinderella movie coming out, a live-action
yeah.
Cinderella. And as much as I might like to see it, because it might be visually stunning and well done and whatever, it scares me. Are they going to take another one of my fairy tales and try to rip it away?
You know, that really ought to be harder to do with Cinderella, because there's not a central character to wrap another story around. I think Maleficent and Sleeping Beauty are uniquely positioned in that respect, because in every other film... Every other princess film is a hero quest. It's about the princess.
Snow White. They could do it to Snow White, because they could go in and be like, oh, well, the evil queen's backstory is really this, and she's not so evil after all.
Yeah, okay. Maybe. Maybe they could do that.
Or they could even do it with Ursula. Why Ursula hates Triton in The Little Mermaid. I mean... They could make this whole
no.
big deal of it,
you know,
if they really wanted to be a pain.
I don't think so. And they've already tried that with Snow White twice. You know, with Mirror, Mirror, and with Snow White and the Huntsman, both of which were horrible films.
Neither of which were done by Disney.
Both of which were horrible films. Yeah, the Asylum did Snow White, and it was a great film. So, anyway...
I'm just saying that I hope that this is not a trend.
That
they don't
agree.
Continue to try to take these beloved fairy tales. And I know that Disney haters, and they're out there, there's plenty of them. I deal with them at work every day thinking that I'm silly for loving Disney the way I do. But I hope that this isn't something that they're trying to turn these Disney haters into Disney lovers, and therefore
right.
ruining the fairy tales and the fantasy realms that... essentially little girls live for.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God Destiny wasn't a princess girl. Because if she was, this film could have devastated her.
I'm surprised that Kate's girls received it as well as they did.
Again,
so,
I don't think they're huge princess girls.
No.
Okay. They're of the age of the Little Mermaid and Jasmine, and
right.
are their princesses.
Right. Okay. Well, we're running a little long, but I want to address the other one before we close down. I want to talk about the Lone Ranger.
Okay.
Because this is also a Disney film.
Again, a year old, and this is the first time we've seen it.
Yeah, these are also true. And if you don't know anything about The Lone Ranger, or if you don't know anything about the movie and you're worried about spoilers, movie's a year old, and Lone Ranger's been around for 100 years. So you're a little late on that.
And I don't know that I could really give a lot of spoilers. That one's it was a really pleasing movie to me, but it's really hard to describe.
Well, no, I don't think it's hard to describe. I'll come back to that. What gets me is that where Maleficent gets all of this praise and it's a great film, and we thought it really wasn't. Lone Ranger was panned
and lost money in the box office.
Yes, and I don't think I think it might have lost money before the box office, because it just everybody seemed to make it their job to hate this film. And consequently, I didn't go to the theater to see it because everybody was
telling us not to.
And, you know, there's only so much time in the day and whatever. But when the DVD came out, I thought, people still hated it. And I don't want to have to put another movie on my shelf if I'm going to hate it, too. And so we didn't buy the DVD. You know,
which is saying something, because our shelf has a lot of movies.
Yeah. But I even checked it out from the library because I wasn't willing to spend money on a movie that I was afraid, like you said with Maleficent, was going to destroy one of my childhood heroes. I mean, the Lone Ranger and Tonto. I mean, when this came out, when the movie came out, I'm like, all right, this can't stand. And I made the children watch the Lone Ranger animated show, and I made them watch the movie they did in the 1980s. And I tried to make them watch the ones with Clayton Moore, but, you know, they're in black and white, so... Some of them, anyway. But when we finally watched it, and I thought it was an excellent movie. It was a classical Western. And there were some things in it that that weren't done in the classical Western style, including the portrayal of the spirit or of Silver, Silver the spirit horse, and the portrayal.
He didn't get
Tonto.
His name till the end, and they should have named him earlier.
But both Tonto and John were treated in a respectful manner and very consistent with the characters that they portrayed. They gave Tonto a more in-depth origin than he has ever been given before. And, you know, I didn't think that Johnny Depp was being very wacky and
No,
and
I
over
thought
the
he
top.
Portrayed it very well.
I thought it was a very serious, you know, very serious thing. And, you know, there were a few one-liners and there were some things that I could have done without. Like the madam with the wooden leg, I thought that was just weird. But,
or, you know, the way his brother died.
Well, no, I see that when they went there with it because when you meet Tonto, he calls Cavendish Wendigo, and as soon as he said that, I knew exactly what they were going, because that is a specific form of Western story.
Gotcha.
And he comes out. I am the last of the Wendigo hunters, the Comanche, and you know there was that. I thought I wished they would have developed it more, but everything else was just. I mean the all of the elements were there. The railroad, the rail barons, the Comanche, and I was afraid that they were going to trot out the agenda drum. And the evils of the white man and progress, and we got a little bit of that, but for the most part, evil in the movie wasn't decided by these are the white men, these are the rail barons.
No, it was just decided by greed.
It was decided by greed, and it wasn't just the white men and that who succumbed to that in the end.
No.
You know, it was... evil was a level force in this film rather than being attached specifically to one group.
Now, I can see why it got panned, because like you said, it was done traditional Western style.
Yeah.
And that's not really the style of movie that most people are used to now. It's a slower paced movie, although it was still an action film, and we still really enjoyed it. It wasn't the nonstop beat-em-up kind of film that people are used to these days.
And the repartee, as it were, was, I mean, it wasn't Lethal Weapon. It wasn't Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. This is not a buddy cop film.
And it wasn't He Lives Happily Ever After and Gets the Girl.
This is true. Yeah. No, this is a classic. This movie is the Western that Curtis and I have been looking for a very long time. And I think he's going to be upset that he missed the boat on this.
Well, so, you can save it and make him watch it tomorrow.
Isaiah's going to be crushed as it is that he fell asleep in the middle of it.
He waited the whole movie for the one line that didn't come until the end, and he fell asleep. All he wanted was to hear the Lone Ranger say, "Hi-ho, Silver, away."
And he didn't get to because he was sleeping.
But to be fair, it's not that it was a boring film. It's that we made him go out and do yard work for 4 hours.
Because we're terrible people. Anyway. So, yeah, we spent so much time on Maleficent, and there's so much more that I'd rather be saying about The Lone Ranger, because I enjoyed it more.
Well, maybe you and Curtis can talk about it and review it.
Maybe we will. Maybe we will. In the meantime, thank you for joining us in the reaction chamber. Do you have any closing remarks for us?
Nope.
Okay. Well, avoid Maleficent, go see Lone Ranger. Both very good, very good visually.
I was going to say, I don't know that I'd say avoid Maleficent. I'd just say be prepared and don't think of it as part of the Sleeping Beauty universe.
Yeah. And if you're going to go watch The Lone Ranger, understand that you are getting a classical Western film with a much different structure than what Michael Bay and James Cameron and all of these other yahoos are putting out right now. It's an excellent, excellent film. It's just not going to be what you're used to. So anyway, thank you for joining us in the reaction chamber, and we will see you next time.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license.